From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Seattle is updating the 20-year bicycle master plan. Public comments are due on January 31st, the last Thursday of the month. Bike advocates say the plan could transform Seattle into one of the top cycling cities in the world. But will the changes be enough to convince you to take a bike? And is it worth the yet-to-be-determined cost? The city is still taking public input and working on this master bike plan. The price tag for the original 2007 bike master plan was $240 million over 10 years. With us in the studio, Kevin O'Neill with the Seattle Department of Transportation. He's managing the bike master plan. Maybe you've got some questions or comments. It's 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW, 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Maybe first of all, what are the goals for the master bike plan?
So the city, as you mentioned, has a current bicycle master plan that was adopted in 2007. And that plan was arranged around two primary goals. One was to increase ridership for cyclists, and one was to increase safety. The goals of the update are to continue to do those things, and we're actually looking out for the next 20 years. The current plan is more of a 10-year plan. Now we're looking out 20 years. To continue those two goals, but also have a better connected network, to make cycling more equitable around the city in terms of how we distribute facilities around the city, and to really improve the city's overall livability as well. So thinking about how bicycle infrastructure and facilities really promote the quality of life of the city overall. So we've kind of expanded the goals of the update a little bit.
Give us some examples. If this master bike plan is adopted and goes into effect, what will we see? What will we notice about bicycles?
I think you'll notice, one of the things you'll notice is really a change in the types of facilities that we put out on the street. So we've been implementing the 2007 plan. And so what a lot of people have seen are changes to adding bicycle lanes on major streets, sometimes adding what are called sharrows or shared lane markings on streets. We've tried to improve the trail system. We'll certainly continue to do a lot of those things. But the updated plan, we got very clear direction from council in terms of what they wanted to see in the updated plan. And one of the things they really wanted to see in the updated plan is really increasing the sort of toolkit or types of design facilities that we put out. So two things that they mentioned specifically were neighborhood greenways, which are local streets. So they're not arterial streets. They tend to be local streets that are really prioritized for pedestrians and bicycles. The current bicycle master plan identified about 15 to 20 miles of greenways. The draft updated plan that you mentioned has about 225 miles of greenways. So we've greatly expanded the greenways network. The council was also really interested in adding what they called more separated bicycle facilities. So facilities that are more separated from travel lanes.
Like a separate lane that's not with traffic going by it?
So a bike lane is a separate bicycle lane. What a term of art is a cycle track, for example, is a separated bicycle lane where there's actually like a hard separation of some kind. It can be a vertical separation, or it can be a landscape barrier or something really that's really very clearly separates the cyclists from the travel lane. That's a facility type that's not in the current plan, but it's something that the council really wanted to see in the updated plan.
Now, the original plan, we saw the price tag was $240 million. What do you estimate the price tag will be for the new one?
We haven't developed an estimate yet because the network plan is very much in flux still. We've put out a draft. I think typically speaking, a neighborhood greenway, which will be featured more prominently in this plan, can be per mile fairly inexpensive depending on the level of improvements that have to happen, like at an arterial crossing or sometimes with sidewalk improvements. A cycle track is probably going to be the most expensive per mile type of treatment, depending again on the type of design standard. So as we tweak the network plan based on the public comment we're getting, we'll definitely start to develop costs for what the entire plan would be.
You got a ballpark idea? I mean, $240 million last time, it would be more, less, about the same?
You know, given that this is a 20-year plan, not a 10-year plan, I would expect it to be a bit more than that because okay. I think we have more miles in the updated plan.
We're talking about the updated bicycle master plan for Seattle. Kevin O'Neill with the Seattle Department of Transportation is kind of managing this, and we're going to be bringing in some callers to talk about it, and you can join up too, 206-543-5869 if it's a question. or a comment. Maybe you're already quite familiar with what's going on with this. Let's bring into the conversation Eugene Wasserman, president of the North Seattle Industrial Association. He's been an outspoken opponent of extending the Burt Gilman Trail through Ballard because of safety concerns that he has for how bikes and the industry there works together. Eugene, what's the business community in Ballard and North Seattle think about this new bike plan?
Well, we had a presentation on a Tuesday that Kevin was at, and we found it, like the previous bicycle plan, totally unrealistic, not based on like the measurements of the street, and it needs a lot of work to go forward.
Give us a specific example of what you mean by that. What about it is impossible?
Let's take 45th Street in between University District and Ballard becomes Market. They have a separated bikeway on the map, which would take out one lane of traffic. That's also a heavily trafficked transit system, which I'm sure they would like their lane also. And then there's a lot of parking for businesses in those districts that they used to stay alive on. So something's going to have to give.
Yeah.
Either transit service, a parking for businesses, or the bike lane. But there's no there's no realism here. It's just lines on a map, and it's a wish list.
Now, I know you've been a skeptic of a lot of the moves the city has taken on bicycles in the past, Eugene. Is there anything in this plan you like?
No, the fact that we maybe can have a more realistic discussion about bicycle safety. We're disappointed there's not more discussion of that in this plan. And the city doesn't have the borrowing capacity to build these things. Our businesses in most of the world plans on realistic things. This is a wish list, and it needs just a lot more work to do it. It excludes some things we'd like to see, and it just needs a lot more work. The city's not with a bridge repair deficit of $1.5 billion, and the city's up to its borrowing limits.
Yeah.
With the arena deals pretty close to the borrowing limits. Someone has to be the adult and make decisions as to what can be funded and what not.
Eugene, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it. Eugene Wasserman, president of the North Seattle Industrial Association. A couple of points there. One, is he correct when he says this plan envisions taking out a lane of traffic on 45th Avenue in that very busy corridor between the University District and Ballard?
Well, I would agree with Eugene, first of all, that the draft network plan does need a lot more work.
Yeah.
So we put out a draft plan based on what we had been hearing in our first round of public involvement.
Yeah.
And then we developed a criteria of the type of facility we might want to put on different streets. So he's correct. On a street like Market 45th, given the characteristics of the street, the speed, the traffic, we proposed as a potential facility type a cycle track. We also, though, highlighted the fact that that's also identified in the Transit Master Plan as a priority transit corridor. So we highlighted that the design of that would need a lot more work in terms of future development of the project to determine whether a cycle facility could realistically go on that street, or if not, whether there's a parallel street where it could go on instead.
So it's still an open question of whether it's doable.
It absolutely is an open question because it's a draft at this point, and we need to do more analysis of a lot of these arterial corridors.
His other question just had to do with like the money, the other transportation needs that the city has. And how does the money we're thinking about expending on bicycles fit into the other transportation needs?
It's a good question. I mean, we currently have a Bridging the Gap measure that was adopted by the voters in 2006. Out of that pot of money, which is approximately $40 million a year, we do fund a lot of the pedestrian bicycle improvements. We use most of that money for maintenance. That's actually incorporated in the ordinance. So currently, in terms of SDOT's overall budget, only about 2.5% is devoted to bicycle improvements. So I think one of the policy questions that we'll have to talk about with council when we bring the updated plan forward is what is the overall price tag and how will that relate to other priorities that SDOT wants to do.
Let's bring another interested party into the conversation. We've been hearing Kevin O'Neill with the Seattle Department of Transportation. Jamie Chaney is executive director of Commute Seattle, which is a collaborative effort between the Downtown Seattle Association, representing downtown businesses, SDOT, and King County Metro. Jamie, you think this plan is good for business?
I do. I think that the plan has been well received by the business constituents that we work with, if not cautiously. But I think there's a large percentage of them who understand the economic competitiveness of improving bike facilities so that we can grow bike travel, and how that both attracts jobs. I have a lot of building developers who and owners who describe that they're hearing regularly from their current or prospective tenants that they and their employees want more bike amenities in and around their buildings,
mm-hmm.
and these developers are responding to that. So it helps attract jobs, businesses to locate in Seattle, attracts workers to Seattle, and it also helps really with sort of a practical geometry, which is to grow business in downtown Seattle. We want the jobs and the people, but we don't necessarily want all the cars that come with those.
Sure, and bicycling might cut down on that. Jamie Chaney, you like the goals. You think that this plan will kind of accomplish them. You think it's perfect. Anything in this plan that you'd like to see changed?
So I like the plan overall. I'm not sure it's perfect, but I think that's what public engagement is all about, and further, you know, development of the plans. I think that the business community has a commitment to grow bicycle travel into downtown Seattle, whether it's for commuters or visitors or residents. And while they've made that commitment, it doesn't mean that there aren't some difficult trade-offs. And I think those trade-offs will be, competition for street use. And so there'll be some trade-offs on whether it's travel lanes or mm-hmm. parking. But I think if we want to achieve a downtown that has lots of different options for access and circulation and people getting around and accommodating more jobs, then some of those decisions will be made in the future.
Jamie, thanks for your time. Jamie Chaney, Executive Director of Commute Seattle, working with the downtown businesses, King County Metro, and SDOT. Max Hep-Buchanan is an advocacy programs manager and the lead on the bicycle master plan for the Cascade Bicycle Club. So he represents the bicycling community in this. Max, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
So what do you like about this plan? Is there anything you don't like about it?
We think the plan's off to a great start. There's all kinds of new world-class bikeways that are planned for streets where nothing currently exists. And in some cases, what does exist is not what we'd consider the state of the art for bicycle planning and design in 2013. So I think what we're really looking for now is a good skeleton network of all ages and abilities bikeways that really connect people to different neighborhoods.
When you look at the plan, it's got some details. We just heard about one of them, the idea of a separated bike path along 45th between the University District and Ballard. Are there any specifics in this plan where you're kind of going, I'm not really crazy about that?
Well, there's definitely corridors like 45th where there's lots of trade-offs, like Kevin and Eugene both mentioned. We just have to look at what those trade-offs are and see if we can come to some kind of agreement. But no, there's nothing that stands out as, no, I don't like that.
We talked about ridership safety, and that's been a goal all along. What do you see in this plan that improves ridership safety? Of course, the separated bike lane is one thing. What else?
Well, the separated cycle tracks and the neighborhood greenways and the urban trails have all really been shown to be safe places for people to bike, and that's what we need to connect our neighborhoods before we start infilling with bike lanes and other paint treatments that sort of work for the enthused and confident type of bike rider.
Hey, thanks a lot for joining us, Max. We really appreciate it. Max Hep-Buchanan, who's the Advocacy Programs Manager with the Cascade Bicycle Club. Kevin O'Neill in the studio with us, who's working on the bike master plan for the city. So we got this email from Curtis who said, someone pays for rerouting, striping, and signing. Someone pays for parking spots being taken along the sides of streets. Someone pays for lawsuits for rail track hazards. Don't kid yourself. Everyone pays and pays more than budgeted. There are costs to businesses, taxpayers, and liabilities that are outside any budget. Kevin, how do you address that part of it? There's paying for these lanes that you talked about, but are there other costs that are would need to be borne?
Well, I think there's always maintenance costs. So anytime you put in a new facility, you also have to pay the cost of maintaining. So that goes with the kind of the territory. I think in terms of thinking about other costs, like what is the trade-off between adding a bicycle lane and perhaps taking a parking lane away? I mean, there is a cost trade-off that has to go there. I think Certainly, parking is deemed as an amenity for businesses, but I think, as Jamie mentioned, improved bicycle facilities are also deemed as an amenity for businesses. So I think we're not kidding ourselves that on a lot of these arterials, particularly where there are other uses of the street already, we're going to have to do a very detailed analysis of considering trade-offs and pros and cons of adding bicycle infrastructure. But I think to accomplish some of the goals that the council has expressed, we are going to have to put in a higher quality bicycle facility on at least some of those corridors.
We've got Martin on the line giving us a call today from Shoreline. Martin, do you have a question or a comment about this bicycle master plan for Seattle?
It's actually kind of translates to what he just said, but it was just curious if the maintenance part of it to maintain the assets is considered in the plan, because I know that the existing striping, they have a fair amount of, you know, just transition lanes and green lanes and such that are not currently maintained. So when we start adding these assets, are we going to? And then also at the same time, signal operations.
Yeah, that's a good question. So another question about maintenance, is the money in there for these things?
Well, we have a pot of money that we currently use, again, through the Bridging the Gap measure, that we have to use for new facilities, maintenance, signage, intersection improvements, and, you know, program activities. So there's a lot of trade-offs that have to happen within that pot of funding. And I think, to the caller's point, as we increase the amount of bicycle facilities out in the street, it will increase the maintenance needs as well. So I think that is something that will have to be calibrated in the overall cost equation.
Martin, thanks so much for your question. Let's go to Tom Focaloro, who's a owner, operator, and blogger at the Seattle Blog, bike blog. Tom, you know, we've heard a lot of people talking about some of the advantages of this. You're also involved in the biking community. Are there some reservations you have about the plan as it exists right now?
I see the plan as kind of a compromise already. I guess I'm, if I were designing it, I'd have, cycle tracks on, just about every major street that you'd want. So, I think that's why they don't put me in charge of these plans. I think the city is handling these competing interests and keeping them in mind and listening to them in making the plan. I think, it's yet to be seen how it will be funded, because, it's kind of a waste of time if we make the plan and then don't put any money into it. But, I think that that's a battle for another day.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good question, and I want to toss that back to Kevin O'Neill. Thanks very much for taking the time to be with us, Tom. What about the funding part of it? Will there be another package for voters to vote on to pay for this and for other transportation things?
Yeah, I think funding is certainly a complex question. So I mentioned the Bridging the Gap measure that's in place now. That expires in, I think, 2016 or 2015. So
that's coming up.
There could be certainly work to do a second Bridging the Gap measure. And so part of the discussion there will be what would be the balance of potential bike improvements versus the other needs that the city has. So that will certainly be a conversation that will happen in the next couple of years. In addition, we have a capital improvement program with the city that funds typically more expensive projects. So some of these projects, like a cycle track in downtown Seattle, for example, which could become a more expensive project, could, instead of being funded out of the annual SDOT program, could become a CIP project and become part
CIP.
Of the, I'm sorry, capital improvement program.
Okay.
So one of the things that I think we'll have to look at is what is the whole overall range of potential funding mechanisms, including grant funding, that we might want to pursue with this plan update.
Now, comments can come in until January 31st. What's the next step in the process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're taking public comments really all along the way as we go. So the reason we set a public comment deadline for the draft network plan only is so then we can correlate all those comments and make changes to the plan. We don't currently have a complete plan pulled together yet. So Eugene mentioned, for example, safety. That's a huge issue that we need to develop more policy and program language on, and we'll be doing that over the next couple months. So the next key steps are we're going to be working on sort of defining the implementation measures of the plan, more about funding, more about how we prioritize projects. and then pulling all that together and releasing a draft overall plan that the public can respond to later in the spring, and then having another round of public engagement.
When do you expect the council would approve this?
We would hope that the council would be ready to approve the updated plan in maybe summer or early fall of this year.
Hey, Kevin, thanks so much for telling us about the bicycle plan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin O'Neill with the Seattle Department of Transportation, kind of heading up the project for a new bicycle plan for Seattle.